me, Ellie Krug. And if you are on Facebook Live right now, you're looking to see me. I got a new do. I got a little bob. I'm kind of liking it. Yeah, so thank you, Kara, my stylist of forever, last decade. You did good. Hey, everyone. Hello. Sorry about that interlude. Hello. Welcome to Ellie 2.0 Radio. This is me, Ellie Krug, your host for the next hour. I am thrilled to have you here, to have you on March 8th, the day during Women's History Month and the day after International Day of Women, which was, I've got you on March 9th. International Day of Women is March 8th. I get my days screwed up. And put a pin in the fact that it's Women's History Month, okay, and International Day of Women was yesterday. I'm going to come back to it later on in the show. We have a great show for you, okay? In fact, today's show is something that I have not done for a while. It is an Ellie's Talking Head show. I don't think that I have done Ellie's Talking Head for at least a year. So, and with that, I mean, what does it mean to have a Talking Head show? It means it's all me. All me. All talk. All me. Okay? All the time. No, just for the next hour, okay? I don't have an interview for you. It's been a hectic week. It is not, you know, there's just a lot of logistics in getting somebody to be on the show. So it's all commentary. And I hope you're okay with that. But if not, okay, that's the great thing about radio or podcasts. You can just hit a button, click, okay, and poof, I'm gone. If only life was that simple about everything, right? Okay, so let's get started. Shall we? Let's begin with this week's featured idealist. We're still going to do that. Don't worry about that. For background, I'm sure that most of you are familiar with the crackpot. I think that that's the right phrase. Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama and his hold, exclamation marks around that word hold, on the promotions of 440 military officers. That promotions that he held up for 10 months as in protest of Defense Department policy allowing pregnant female service members to be reimbursed for travel to states where abortions are legal. That's all because of Roe versus Wade. That hold created significant morale, the repeal of Roe versus Wade, I should note, okay? That hold created significant morale and organizational challenges in all branches of the military. I mean, here he is, Tommy Tuberville is saying 440 people can't progress from colonel to general or from general to one star to two stars or whatever, okay? And it created a lot of challenges, okay? I mean, you may recall that the commandant for the Marines had a heart attack. And because there had not been any promotions, he didn't have a second, you know, who could take over for him. It created huge issues. But last December, after intense pressure, not only from Democrats, but also from senators, Tommy Tuberville finally relented and released his hold on all of the military officers that he'd been putting the hold on. And I'm sure that that was a relief to those officers and their families. However, just as Tuberville released his hold, another senator, Eric Schmidt of Missouri, stepped forward and placed a hold on six officers. Now, Senator Schmidt's office issued a statement that that hold was part of Senator Schmidt's fight to, quote, eradicate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that he believes, quote, are divisive. Later, Senator Schmidt released his hold on five of those six officers. You're with me so far, right? It's the one remaining hold, the one remaining officer who is being held that I want to talk about here. Because that officer, subject to the hold, Colonel Ben Johnson, and it's spelled J-O-N-S-S-O-N, is an idealist of heroic proportions. He is. Now, much of what follows is from a March 5th article in military.com by Rebecca Keel. It is, by the way, an excellent article. She's an excellent writer. Colonel Johnson, for background here, excuse me, Colonel Johnson is a 1999 graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy. He is, now get this, he is a veteran of 900 combat flight hours over Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan. I mean, this is not some desk jockey, okay? This is not some wallflower, all right? He's been in combat. He's flown combat air patrol CAP missions, okay? And he's been posted both in the Middle East, where he learned Arabic, and then 2 years ago, he was back at the Air Force Academy, where he held, where he worked to combat sexual harassment and violence against female candidates. You may also, you recall that they had and continue to have huge problems about sexual harassment of female cadets, not only at the Air Force Academy, but all the other academy, you know, the Army Academy as well, West Point. Colonel Johnson was also the vice wing commander in Qatar and then the wing commander at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida. To give you an idea about Colonel Johnson, let me read the opening from Rebecca Keel's piece, okay? Quote, this is her piece published March 5 on in military.com. Quote, Colonel Ben Johnson was accompanying then Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson on a trip through the Middle East as one of her military assistants in 2017. It was the height of the war against ISIS, and after a swing through Iraq, the delegation stopped in Jordan to discuss the fight with one of the leading U.S. partners in the anti-ISIS coalition. As Wilson's meeting with the head of Jordan's Air Force was getting ready to start, Johnson strode up to the Air Force chief, this would be the Jordanian Air Force chief, and greeted him in Arabic. At first, the general, that would be the Jordanian general, was taken aback, but he was quickly disarmed by Johnson meeting him at his level. And then Keel's now quoting Heather Wilson, okay, who was the Air Force secretary. This is what Heather Wilson said about Johnson doing that. Quote, the tenor of the meeting changed because Ben was there. Wilson, who served as Air Force Secretary from 2017 to 2019 in the Trump administration, recalled in a recent interview with military.com. Quote, I saw a side of him that was different than just a staff officer. I saw tremendous potential as a leader, engaging our allies in ways that could deepen our partnership and build alliances that are absolutely vital. Unquote. In other words, Colonel Ben Johnson is a dynamic human. And she goes on to say that if she was still in the Air Force, she would have enthusiastically put his name forward for promotion. Sounds like the kind of officers that we want, right? Battling bad on behalf of the United States. So because of the professionalism of the caliber of professionalism of Colonel Johnson, and what he represented, the Biden administration nominated him to receive a promotion to Brigadier General. I mean, that's, you know, and they nominated him in January of 2023. However, that promotion currently, presently, is in jeopardy because of that hold by Eric Schmidt, Senator Schmidt of Missouri. The promotion is in jeopardy all because of an op-ed that Colonel Johnson penned in the Air Force Times that ran on July 1, 2020, barely a month after George Floyd's murder. Now, you may recall that in the wake of George Floyd being murdered, the country underwent a profound period of talking about skin color and institutional racism. I know this personally because my talk, titled Getting Past the Bumpiness, White Fragility and Skin Color, was in high demand. High demand. Thus, the Air Force sought to have honest conversations about racism within its ranks. Now, parenthetically, please recall that it wasn't until July of 1948 that President Truman desegregated the military, ending 150 years of segregation in the United States military. Okay, I mean, so they have the U.S. military has a 150-year history of racism. As part of the Air Force conversations, Colonel Johnson drafted an opinion piece. This is right after George Floyd's murder, okay, in which Colonel Johnson, he before that piece made public, okay, he informally shared his piece, proposed draft piece, with mentors in the military whom thought that the piece was appropriate. The op-ed by Colonel Johnson which came out, hold on July 1st of 2020. It came out in the Air Force Times. Okay. It started with this, quote, "Dear White Colonel, we must address our blind spots around race." And then Colonel Johnson went on to write, quote, "As you and I are the biggest barriers to change if we do not personally address racial injustice in our Air Force. As white colonels, you and I are the biggest barriers to change if we do not personally address racial injustice in our Air Force. Defensiveness is a predictable response by white people to any discussion of racial injustice. White colonels are no exception. We are largely blind to institutional racism, and we take offense to any suggestion that our system advantaged us at the expense of others." And then he goes on to write that, "I address this letter to white colonels made many of you uneasy, and we have seen similar white defensiveness play out in many of our conversations since the murder of George Floyd." And then Colonel Johnson goes on to share a number of different scenarios, okay, about various conversations that he had with other white Air Force colonels, where those colonels, the white colonels, made jokes to deflect the conversation, or where the colonels, white colonels, downplayed the lived experience of black service members. Colonel Johnson then wrote, hold on, here we go. "Dear white colonel, you and I set the culture, drive the calendar, and create the policies at most of our installations around the Air Force. If we do not take the time to learn, to show humility, to address our blind spots around race, and to agree that we are not as objective as we think and our system is not as fair as we think, then our Air Force will not rise above George Floyd's murder." Get that. Now, he wrote the word murder long before Derek Chauvin was convicted. And then Colonel Johnson goes on to write, "But we can rise above it. We can break these invisible barriers if we choose to engage and stop excusing ourselves." And he went on to say, "The Chief of Staff and the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force gave us their intent. We have been presented a crisis. We can no longer walk by this profession. We must look inward at our Air Force and at every echelon of command so we emerge stronger as a profession of arms." And then Colonel Johnson writes, "Over to us." And then he writes, "Start by developing a game plan. A good primer is to read or listen to the short book, quote, White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism, by Robin DiAngelo. Dear White Colonel, it is time to give a damn. Aim high." Now that's part of the opinion piece, okay, that showed up in the Air Force Times that Colonel Ben Johnson wrote back in July and July 1, 2020. And all of what, and frankly, I don't think it was all that provocative. You know, I don't. And certainly referring to Robin DiAngelo's book was totally appropriate. In fact, reactions to what Colonel Johnson wrote are the epitome of white fragility. They, you know, I mean, the reactions to what Colonel Johnson has said, okay, the way that white people, white colonels and white other people, including senators, reacted is actually white fragility at work. It is. And so even though it was, in my view, not very provocative, even though, in my view, it was pretty darn factual, Colonel Johnson has been lambasted as a result. Conservative groups like the Heritage Foundation and conservative publications like the Daily Signal have gone after Colonel Johnson and made him the poster child for their efforts to eradicate wokeism from the military. Now, in her piece, Rebecca Keel suggests that one reason for Colonel Johnson's motivation to speak out against racism is that two of his five children are adoptees from Ethiopia. One can assume that having those children in his life changed and shaped his perspective about the fundamental role that skin color plays in our society. And here we are with a U.S. senator now targeting Colonel Johnson to make a point. Under the law, there is an 18-month window for approving promotions. So If Colonel Johnson's promotion isn't approved by May of this year, okay, 2 months from now, the promotion will automatically be withdrawn. That's the way the rules work. Now, President Biden could then extend the nomination for another 12 months. He could. But that doesn't mean, I mean, if Senator Schmidt doesn't remove the hold, I don't know. I mean, the Senate could vote individually on Colonel Johnson's promotion, and maybe they will do that. I don't know. That's why they held off. They didn't do it for 10 months with Tommy Tuberville. But it doesn't matter. I mean, if the 2024 election goes the wrong way, Colonel Johnson's never going to become a brigadier general. And think of the messaging that this sends to anyone in the military relative to working for more inclusion. Think of what it tells our service members of color. It's just as if, you know, as it is just as Colonel Johnson wrote, it's all about institutional structural racism. And that racism continues to rear its ugly head to hold so many, including Colonel Johnson, down. Now, I want to read one last quote from Rebecca Keel's piece, because it's just a really great quote. And this is her now quoting again Wilson, what was her name? Heather Wilson, okay, about having worked with Colonel Johnson, okay? Here's what Heather Wilson told Rebecca Keel. Quote, "Officers with both operational experience and deep regional understanding were very, very, very scarce," Wilson said. "If you go down the list of 400-some-odd generals that were up for promotion during Tuberville's hold, and you said, okay, how many of these officers have deep experience in the Middle East, understanding that area of the world, and also operational experience, I think you probably find one name. And that's Ben Johnson. Shame on you, Senator Eric Schmidt. Shame on you also, Tommy Tuberville, to start all of this. Both of you are the problem, not Colonel Ben Johnson." I'll try to keep up on what happens to Colonel Johnson, hopefully soon to be Brigadier General Johnson. I hope I can keep up, you know, finding out about how military promotions, all that stuff goes, a little bit tricky. But nonetheless, Colonel Ben Johnson, American hero, American idealist, and somebody paying the price for wanting to change the world. That's what idealists sometimes do. Sometimes they have to pay a huge price for wanting positive change. Okay, that's the end of our A block. When we come back, you're going to get more of me, Ellie Krug. It's a talking head show. What more could you ask for? I don't know. All right. If you like what I hear, visit my website at elliekrug.com. If you like me, okay, follow me on Instagram, okay? I don't know. I could say Twitter. I still look at it occasionally, okay, at Ellie Krug. And then also, if you like, go to my website, elliekrug.com, sign up for my newsletter, The Ripple. When we come back, we'll be doing more talking head from Ellie Krug on AM 950, Ellie 2.0 Radio, the only radio show in the world about idealism and hosted by a transgender woman. All right, be back in a sec. And we're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio. You got me, Ellie Krug, talking head show. I hope you like that. Maybe not. You're like, hey, where's the interview? I wanted the interview. I will endeavor to have an interview for you next Friday or next Saturday. I promise. Okay. All right. Okay. I want to talk now about President Joe. All right. Now, some of you may, I know that many of you, we'll recall my show of about a month and a half ago where I played a clip of Lyndon Johnson in 1968 saying that he would not run, nor would he accept, the nomination for president in 1968 after one term, because he needed to concentrate on the Vietnam War and also because it was pretty clear he was not going to get elected. And so, and I had called in that show for President Biden to do the same thing, okay, because of all the things about his age and some other things. And my fear that, you know, he's just not going to get elected, okay, and that it was time. I continue to believe it's still time for somebody younger to step in. But nonetheless, okay, and I'm going to come back to a little bit of that reaction in a second, okay? Thursday night was the State of the Union. This is the difference between tape and live. Thursday night was the State of the Union address. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story, okay? I went to Boston College Law School and lived in Boston for a number of years after getting out of law school. And at that time, okay, BC football, you know, the Maine University football team was like, had national, like big time national standing. It was in part because, well, it was all because of Doug Flutie, who was this incredible, you know, I don't even think Flutie was 5'10". He was this short quarterback who could run and throw, and he's the one who did the Hail Mary pass and you know, and all of that stuff. And with Gerard Phelan. And I remember that name. But it got to the point when every time BC football played a game, I couldn't watch it. It was too emotional for me. And I had this, you know, I thought I jinxed them every time I turned on the TV. Then they would lose the ball or somebody would score. And so I played this game every time BC played. I played this game with myself, which is I would do other things, turn the TV on for 5 minutes, see what was going on, and then go back, because I just couldn't emotionally handle the idea that BC Law is going to lose, or excuse me, BC University, Boston College was going to lose. Sorry about that. And so Thursday night with the State of the Union address, the same fears crept in with me. The fear that, you know, President Joe was going to get up there. He was going to flub. He was going to lose his lines. He was going to melt his words, whatever, that he would look pathetic. Okay. I was worried about that. I really was worried. And so I could not watch the State of the Union. I'm just letting you know that. Okay. I emotionally could not handle it. And so I turned on Resident Alien on Netflix, which, by the way, is not a bad show. Because I am who I am, I kept coming back, okay, to MSNBC for a little bit of clip of President Joe speaking. And then I certainly had New York Times live chat going on the entire time I'm watching Resident Alien. So I'm sure I'm not the only one that multitasks like that, okay? And so, and I made it through, okay? But what I saw in those little moments where I'm like flipping on to MSNBC, and then certainly what I was reading in the New York Times ongoing chat feed was fabulous. It really was. I mean, my God, feisty is the word that they were saying in the chat, and I would agree that we had an 81-year-old up there who could dish out to his detractors way better than they were giving it to him. And then my impression about it is that he was darn smart. Okay, I just loved that he talked about having less chips or fewer candy pieces in their bags. Okay, and then lowering credit card fees. I've noticed. You know, geez, are the hamburger buns smaller? Are my English muffins from Thomas's? Did they get that? They got smaller. You know. And so I thought that that was brilliant, okay? And then he talked directly to the Supreme Court, which, you know, they do need a talking to. Don't get me started about that, okay? You know, and he spoke to them about the power of women and how that power is going to show itself. And, of course, there are all these standing ovations as well, okay? And then he asks, as he had been talking to the Supreme Court. But then he also turned to the Republicans, and this is what he said. My God, what freedoms will you take away next? And I've got to tell you, okay? And if you've been listening to this show, you know that that question, what will come next? What will be taken away next right now is central to my existence as a human. and to the existence of many LGBTQ plus people and their families and their parents and their grandparents and their siblings, all of that. That question of what more are we going to lose and who is going to lose it? Because we know it ain't going to be white, straight, Christian people. Okay? Nothing that I have against any of those folks. All right? I happen to be white. Okay? But that question, I thought it was a brilliant way to ask the question and to bring it up. I did. My God, what freedoms will you take away next? He also, in his State of the Union address, had empathy for Gaza. Finally, okay? Finally speaking the truth to Netanyahu. Finally. I mean, you know, and then Vice President Harris was out earlier in the week, or what? Maybe it was the end of last week, saying, you know, we need a ceasefire. We need a two-state solution. You know, it was a great State of the Union. It was. And I'm really thrilled and really proud of President Joe for what he did. I'm proud, obviously to be progressive and to be a Democrat and all that jazz. Okay. Now, my editorial of a month and a half ago about President Joe foregoing his second term. I need to tell you, I have not gotten ever a reaction to any of my 300 plus shows. I have never gotten a reaction to any of my shows before that, like the reaction I got to that. I mean, I had friends telling me, Ellie, you know, I like you a lot, but I'm disagreeing with you on this. And I must, you know, stand firmly on disagreeing with you about President Joe. And, you know, and I want to appreciate that. And I want to respect all of that. Okay, I do. And I appreciate that people reached out to me. You know, thank you for doing that. And all of you who did reach out to me, you know that I responded to you. I'm not one of those people that just ignores you and all that kind of jazz. That being said, okay, and at this point, I think we're in. Okay, it's going to be President Joe versus Donald Trump. It looks like that's the way it's going to happen, short of one of them passing away. Okay, or both. But here's my take as we go forward. You know, the polls have been coming out about, you know, Trump ahead of Biden by, you know, 3 points, 4 points or whatever. And those are not the right polls. The right polls are Trump, Biden, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Because in the background, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is building quite a campaign. He's got disaffected people. He's got younger people. He's got the anti-vaxxers. He's got all kinds of folks, okay? And so in preparation for this show, I tried to find a poll that had President Joe, Trump, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on it as consideration. And I could not find anything past January 22nd of 2024. So the data I'm going to give you right now, okay, that data is a month and a half old. And in politics, that's like, you know, 10 years. But nonetheless, Harvard Caps and Harris poll that was announced or taken on June 22, 2024, had this. It had Trump at 41%, Biden at 33%, and Kennedy at 18%. I mean, that's the way that they need to be polling. And so next time you hear a poll just between Trump and Biden, they're not asking the right questions. And why is Robert F. Kennedy so important, other than the fact that he's pulling away a lot of votes from Biden? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is important because if none of the candidates gets 270 electoral votes, if none of them gets 270, the election goes to the House of Representatives to decide who wins. And we all know how that will turn out, right? We do. We all know how that will turn out. So one of the people that wrote to me, a dear friend, said that she was concerned that my editorial of a month and a half ago would cause people not to want to vote. I want to make sure that I'm on the record, and I will say this multiple times between now and November of this year. Go vote, okay? I want you to make sure you vote. I don't want you to wait it out. I don't want you to just decide it's not worthy, okay? I want you to vote. I want you to vote for, you know, President Joe. That's who I'm asking to vote for, okay? But this is also what you need to do, please. If you have a young person in your life, please tell them to vote and to vote for President Joe and educate them about what I just said to you. And that is if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. gets anything like he's polling right now, okay, there's not going to be, no one's going to get 270. And then it's going to go to the House and Trump will win. So if they vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., there are young people, they're going to elect Donald Trump. It's that clear. And so make sure, please, that you educate your young person about that, because I'm sure that a lot of young people are like, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a great name, you know? And, you know, and, I mean, even though Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is kind of crazy, but nonetheless, okay? So we need to educate. Go vote. Tell our young people, vote for President Joe. And if you vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you're going to elect Donald Trump. Okay? All right. There you go. Okay? President Joe, we're in. I'm in. Okay? I'm in for him. I'm telling you. All right? I'm going forward. Okay? All right. Okay. By all means, email me about this. I'd love to hear from you. All right. When we come back, okay, I'm going to talk more about International Women's Day and Month. Give you some perspective about Ellie Krug. You're listening to me, Ellie Krug, on Ellie 2.0 Radio. If you like what you hear, visit my website, elliekrug.com. We'll be back in a sec. We're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio. Okay. All right. So this is Women's Month. Okay. And on yesterday, the 8th, was International Day of Women. Okay. All right. And, you know, I tell you, I hope that you reflected yesterday on the women that are in your life and that you gave thanks for them. Okay. And, but by the way, you have a whole month to do that. Actually, you have a whole year to do that. Okay. But I mean, all right. And so male identifying humans for sure. Okay. Please give thanks. And female identifying humans, I hope that yesterday you took a moment to feel good, to feel pride for all that you bring to this world. And this is where I need to talk about my changed perspective about womanhood. I mean, you know, transitioning genders, at this point, it will be 15 years coming up. Okay. It has changed my world, of course. You know, funny things that I've learned since being able to finally get to be me, the real me, notwithstanding this horrific male voice, is, you know, the funny things are I've learned how to carry packages differently than when I carried them as a man. I carry them now at my chest, where I used to carry them at my side as a dude. And now I'm like always in my emails just filling them with exclamation marks, because that's the way that women speak. They say something, throw an exclamation mark at the end. And at the end of every email, have a great day, exclamation mark. You know, dudes, they don't do that. They don't care about exclamation marks. Why do women care? Well, they want to make sure that they're seen, okay? And that they're felt. You know, on a more serious note, I mean, I've come to realize that men are hunter-gatherers, that what they like to do is take risks and accumulate things. And women are nurturers, they're preservers. It is not, I do not believe that it is at all a coincidence that most of the dictators in the world have been men. I don't. You know, and my transition to womanhood certainly has made me kinder and gentler. It has. It's made me more compassionate, more visible about that. It feels so good. It just does. And I am just so grateful that I got to be me. Now, I have also been adopted by a group of moms out in Carver County. It's, I think, 7 or 8 other women who see me as a woman. They accept me totally. And they let me in. They let me into the world. Their struggles of motherhood, struggles with spouses or partners, what comes with the struggles, but also some of the joys of making their way through the world, and they've let me, this person, this transgender person, be part of their world. There's no differentiation. There's no like hesitation around, oh my God, with some of the things I've heard. And I mean, as transgender women go, okay, you know, I've talked before about how privileged I am. I am incredibly privileged as it relates to like in the top 1% of transgender people in the world. There's no question about it. I've got education. I have some resources. Forget about the voice, but nonetheless, if you see the bob right now, looks pretty good. And so I have really, really great privilege. And very, very few transgender women get what I get with this group of moms. They call themselves the Momfia, which I think is kind of cool. And I am in awe of them. I am in awe of how they care for each other, of how they're there for each other, how they've been there for me, how they truly, truly cherish each other. And I cherish them. So I just wanted to let you know that, okay? All right. So there's a woman in your life. Will you tell her that she matters? Will you tell her thank you for what she has done for you and continues to do for you? And will you tell her that you're happy that she's in this world? Could you do that for me? Thanks. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I'll talk a little bit about my work as an idealist. Okay, you're listening to me, Ellie Krug on Ellie 2.0 Radio. We'll be back in a sec. She will always carry on. Something is lost. How long till my soul gets it right? Can any human being ever reach that kind of light? I call on the resting soul of Galileo, king of night vision. King and we're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio. Okay. C-Block, I want to talk about my work as an idealist. And I'm going to go back to something I harp about a little bit, quite a bit, and that is about the changing diversity, equity, and inclusion landscape. I mean, in the A-Block about Colonel Ben Johnson, that's part of what's going on, the change, okay, the anti-wokeism. And so I went back and looked at, I keep records, okay? I mean, you know, I go and I speak in front of audiences or I do online, my signature talk, Gray Area Thinking, People Love, which is about human inclusion, about humans, how we try to operate and survive. Doesn't involve shaming any of that. Okay, so here's some stats for you. So as of this time in 2021, by this time in 2021, I had done 21 talks or events in 2021, by this time in March of 2021. In 2023, okay, last year, I had done 14 talks. So a reduction of whatever don't ask me to do the math, but a reduction, okay, compared to 2021. This year, 2024, I've done 6 talks. But, you know, as of this time in May, in March. And then in 2022, because June is Pride Month and many organizations want somebody who is gay or queer or lesbian or whatever, transgender, come and talk to them, okay? It's just the way Pride Month works, okay? In 2022, I did 23 talks in June, okay? Last year in 2023, I did 5. And in 2024, for June, I have 0 talks scheduled. That will give you an idea, okay? That will give you an idea of how the landscape is changing. You know, not everyone is afraid about diversity, equity, and inclusion, okay? But it is breathtaking if you consider what's happened just in 3 years. And it is all about fear. Now, thankfully, you know, thankfully, this is not the way it is with everybody. You know, if you think, surprisingly, many churches are stepping up and want me to come and speak, okay? Which is great. And if I can speak to a whole lot of churches west of Victoria out into greater Minnesota, that's even better, okay? And by the way, if you want to find where I'll be speaking, because I'm going to be speaking in a church in Bloomington, I think 2 churches in Bloomington, 1 in Prior Lake. I don't know where else. I don't remember. Go to elliekrug.com, the events page. You can figure that out. I also need to do a plug, okay, because on Thursday, okay, coming up Thursday next week, all right, is going to be Gray Area Thinking at the Chaska Events Center. In Chaska from 6:30 to 8:30 that night. We've got less than a week for you to sign up to get to register, okay, for that talk. I'd love to see you. Please come, okay? And then lastly, I've been working with a group of lesbians and some allies, particularly one incredible ally, okay? Straight ally, but boy, does she have a heart. Let me just tell you. I've been working with them to create Carver County Pride. Okay, wonderful. All right, and I think we have a gay man involved with that too. Thank you, Carver County Pride, and we're gonna help put on Pride in Chaska in June. Okay, so that's just really great, and I'm just thrilled about that. And that makes me tell you I'm out of time. I need to thank my producer. Patrick, thank you, Patrick. And you made me do math this time. This is a little different, Patrick. I just want to let you know that, okay? But that's all right. I handled it. Listeners, hey, okay, I hope you've enjoyed this Talking Head show. Is it all right? Okay? If you liked it, email me and let me know that, okay? And I'll do some more. But between now and when you hear my voice next, will you do me a favor? Will you go out and do something to make the world better? Okay? Please do that. Ellie Krug. Over and out.